Welcome to Inside the Castle, the podcast that goes behind castle doors to have real conversations with real people about solving the nation's toughest challenges.
I'm one of your hosts today, Aaron Snyder.
And I'm Reagan Lauritsen. In this episode, we are very excited to have a chance to talk to Mr. Edward Belk, the Director of Civil Works for the Corps, before he retires at the end of July with 38 years of service.
Mr. Belk, thank you for joining us here today. I've really enjoyed working with you over the many years. I know you've done some awesome things for the organization. And I wanted to start our conversation by reflecting on the Corps and the people that deliver our mission. You know, thinking about your years, could you share some of the key moments that stand out to you?
Yeah, well, first off, thanks, Aaron. I appreciate you and Reagan giving me an opportunity to visit with you. You do a great job on this podcast, and I'm very impressed by the body of work that's been done here. You know, it's funny. When I look back on my career, I don't remember things as much, accomplishments as much as I do people. You know, that's what I remember, the people who, when I first started, inspired me and were a role model for what right looks like. And I found that over the years, there were a lot of those that came in and out of my life, certainly professionally and personally. And that's what I remember. And then at some point, it dawns on you that what we do is really about people. It's about things and accomplishments and big projects. And, you know, I have been blessed with just an impressive array, not because of me, but because of the projects that I had an opportunity to be involved in. And so there was a lot that I'm thankful for and a lot that I'm proud of. But as I look back, it's people. I mean, that's what helped me become a better person. That's what helped me see how to treat others, you know, how to solve problems, how to deal with conflict and do so in a constructive way. And it took me a while to sort of grow into that, but it's people at the district level, at the division level here at headquarters. And they even had the privilege of working for Mr. James in the Office of Assistant Secretary of the Army. And so it really is about the people.
Mr. Belk, we certainly appreciate your humility, and I think that anybody that's worked with you does. Can you talk a little bit about what your first role within the organization was, and did you ever imagine that someday you would be leading the Civil Works Directorate, and what has that meant to you?
Yeah, thanks, Reagan. Well, no, I can honestly say it never crossed my mind I would be a DCW. I didn't even know what a DCW was when I first joined the Corps. I barely knew what a colonel was in my district. But when I joined the Corps, I started a temporary GS-9 on a hydrographic survey crew. So this was in Memphis District. We were on 4-day work week at that time. We would work theoretically 4 10-hour days, but we'd usually work 5 whatever days, however many hours it took. And we would leave the office at, old dark 30 on Monday, and we'd get back on Friday. And it was awesome because we were out on the Mississippi River, not near any sign of civilization, on our own, far away from the flagpole. And while it was a temporary job, and I knew it, and so did my wife, by that way, and I was going to have to get a permanent one at some point. I came from the private sector. I'd worked for a couple of engineering firms, but I just wanted to work with on the Mississippi River and with the Mississippi River. So right out of the box, I was doing my dream job. And fortunately, it turned into a permanent job at some point, several interviews and Dear John letters later. I did get a permanent job in the district, and that was my first job, temporary GS-9. You know, I never thought I would, you know, I figured if I made a GS-13, that would be career success. I saw a lot of people around me who had spent their whole career at, you know, 12s and 13 levels, and I thought that's what you did. And, you know, I certainly didn't conceive of, you know, coming to headquarters or going to a division or even becoming a senior leader in a district. So all of that was a part of the journey that I've been blessed with.
That's great to hear about that. And, you know, thinking of your career on the different levels, I always think about people in the different phases of their career, where they're at, you know, and wherever they start out, and kind of curious, you know, thinking about your younger self, and, or maybe better yet, could you tell us, what would you tell employees who have been with the Corps for, say, less than 5 years, a new employee that's coming in the Corps, what kind of advice would you give them on, you know, their career and what opportunities there might be within the Corps?
Yeah, that's a great question, Aaron. I probably wouldn't give advice to my younger self, because I would, such a knucklehead, I probably wouldn't follow it even if I got it. But I can tell you that there's, I guess, two or three things I would highlight, the first, and I've learned this over a long period of time in a lot of different jobs, but it's really important to embrace flexibility, adaptability, and new ideas. You know, I've worked with a lot of folks, and some are very sort of focused on their thing and what they've been doing for most of their career. And that's great. That's worked for them. But I found out early on, I had an attention span of about 3 to 5 years in a job. And so change, I felt, was good. It's hard. It's not easy. But if you embrace that flexibility and adaptability and being open to change, I think that's, to me, the path to a rewarding profession. I think the second point is embrace the journey. Question you just posed, I never conceived of, you know, leaving Memphis District. And I found that my career chose me more than I chose it, because the good thing about the Corps, the just incredibly rewarding thing about the Corps, is that you can, like me, spend 38 years and have a different job every 3 to 5 years, and which I needed, because that's my attention span. And so I found that doors would open, and when preparedness meets opportunity, good things happen. And now I'd also tell you, I interviewed for a lot more jobs than I ever was selected for. In fact, there was a time that I thought I was never going to make anything above a 13. And so there was a lot of interviews. But at some point, preparation meets opportunity, door opens, and you have a choice of stepping through it. So I think embracing the journey, that journey is really important. And don't spend a lot of time wringing your hands over the next job. You do well in the job you're in. The next job will take care of itself. And then finally, I guess, don't sweat the small stuff and things that you can't control. I've learned that over time. It really came home when I was on both my tours in Iraq. You know, you could wring your hands into oblivion, but you just have to let go of things you can't control, focus on what you can, and do the best job you can with what you've got. And so embrace flexibility, adaptability, embrace the journey, and don't sweat the small stuff and things you can't control.
That's awesome advice. Speaking of your tours in Iraq, what kept you motivated during the hardest days there and just overall throughout your career?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's funny, I remember my first tour in Iraq, I was on the jet headed to, I guess, Kuwait. We're flying into Kuwait, and then from there we would take Milair into Iraq, at Mosul was where I was stationed on my first tour, and Kirkuk the second tour. And on the way over, at some point, I just, what is wrong with me? I've got a wife, I got three kids at home, and here I am flying into a war zone. You know, it's something, you know. And so I got through that. You know, everybody on that plane probably had the same thought, and it's like, this is what I signed up for. This is what I was called to do. And so, you know, the first thing was just overcoming the you know, fear, frankly, in that situation. But I think beyond that, the thing that, when I look back, that probably drove me more than anything was not letting either myself or others down, just refusing to fail, because it involves somebody else or it involves a commitment I've made. And so once you do that, you got to follow through. And that's not saying I haven't failed. I failed a lot over my career. That's how you learn. I mean, you got to embrace that too. But it's only after I've exhausted every other option do I find failure. So just, you know, not wanting to let myself down or others down, I think, and refusing to fail. And like I say, on my flight to Iraq, just swallow hard and say, I got to do this. I signed up and I've got to follow through. Even though you're ready to jump out of that plane, you know, you can't do it.
Thanks, Mr. Buck. I always find that interesting, like just hearing the people's different perspectives and, you know, the challenges that they go through. And I really liked you hearing you talk about refusing to fail, because I just see that in so many of the people within the Corps and the delivery teams that we have. Like, they are trying to deliver for the public and get these projects in the ground, and everyone is working hard to do that. And I kind of look at the big picture of the Corps, and I wanted you to look back to kind of where you started with the Corps, where it is today, but really, where do you see the organization moving forward? What's our future like?
Yeah. Well, I'm fortunate to work, you know, in a headquarters with kind of a national perspective, and you get to take in a lot of information and interact with Congress and the administration and just kind of have some visibility over the national landscape. And so all of that leaves me with a very positive, optimistic view of the Corps. Several reasons for that. One is our mission, what we do for this country, is incredibly important. I see it every day with members of Congress. I see it every day with this administration. Exhibit A would be the record workload that we've got, that Congress has blessed us with. This is unprecedented amount of work. This administration just released its president's budget, the first one for the administration, and the Corps came out okay. I mean, we compared to some other agencies, it was a very strong investment. And so follow the pocketbook, and where your pocketbook is, where your heart is. And so this country is investing in what we do because it's important to the economy, to the ecosystems, to our economic security. And so I'm very optimistic that that's going to continue. The same with the Congress. You know, this record level of work, you know, they have signed us up to do very important things that they feel are important. The Corps is bipartisan. Both sides of the aisle find value in what we do. So that's the first point I would make. The second is I'm optimistic for the future. We do have a lot of vacancies. And I'll tell you, I'm not taking the DRP. I'm just old-fashioned retirement where you retire and move on. But a lot of people did, and that's great. And we've had a hiring freeze. And so there's a lot of vacancies right now around the Corps. But I see opportunities in that for a lot of our mid-career folks, our younger, newer hires. As opportunities to take on more responsibilities, to move ahead in your career like I did. So it's going to really jumpstart a lot of opportunities to grow for a lot of our people. And so there is opportunities in the Corps for professional growth and professional satisfaction and professional accomplishment as a result of all these vacancies. So that's huge. The Corps just celebrated 250 years service to this country. And so I'm very optimistic for the next 250 years. We're, of course, not going anywhere because water in this country is important. And the things that we are associated with in the water sector are important to this country. And so I'm very optimistic. And the Corps, you know, me and many other leaders will kind of transition out. But I'm just very confident in the next generation stepping up and stepping in to those shoes with fresh ideas, fresh thoughts, new perspectives that I think will bode well for the Corps. So I'm very optimistic. And, you know, all of the churn that we've seen with the new administration over the last few months, that's normal. I've been through enough administration changes to see that. And you got new ideas, new policies, new preferences. And so we're absorbing a lot of change right now, and we're absorbing a lot of, new priorities. Look beyond that. The transitions are always that way. If you've never been through one, it looks like, you know, chaos, but that's just normal. So embrace that. And as we settle into this administration, I think we'll continue to do great things for the country.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm definitely optimistic for the future as well. And I think anytime there's change, it creates that opportunity. You mentioned it earlier about like opportunities for jobs and stepping through those doors. And I think, you know, you got to seize each of these opportunities. You mentioned a little bit about the core mission. And when I first heard about the Corps of Engineers, I had never heard about the Corps of Engineers. I didn't know what the mission is. And I feel like the American public may not understand the full mission and what the Corps does. I mean, they probably visit our recreation sites and don't know it. They might live behind levees and don't know it. They probably get really cheap goods that come through our ports and harbors and don't know it. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the impacts to the average American and really, why does the Corps of Engineers matter?
Yeah, great question, Aaron. I think the Corps, you know, when I joined the Corps, I didn't know much about it. I grew up, you know, 10 or 15 miles from the Mississippi River, and I knew the Corps had some vague, amorphous role in the river. I didn't really know, but I'd, as I said earlier, I knew I wanted to work with that river. You know, it's more of a, I found the Mississippi is closer to an organism than it is a thing, and I wanted to be a part of that. And so the Corps, unless I wanted to be a towboat pilot, the Corps was probably, so I didn't know much, and I think a lot of people are the same way, and I think some of it is we probably need to do a better job of telling our story. I think we have gotten better since I came on board, and we need to embrace the goodness that that we do. I think we're getting better at that as well. But we're sort of a silent servant. General Peabody used to talk about that, you know, silent servant, in that we do a lot of things that most people don't know about. And so, but for the Corps, you know, our gateway to the rest of the world is maritime. We started as a maritime nation back at the birth of our nation, and we are still a maritime nation to this day. And if we interact with the world, rest of this world, economically, we will by default do so by water, through our ports, through our harbors, through our waterways. And that's what we do, ports, harbors, and waterways in our navigation sector. And we've got huge sectors of our economy that depend on that commerce for jobs here in this country and for economic activity in this country, whether it be the agriculture sector, whether it be petrochemicals, you know, whether it be fertilizer and beyond, they all depend on these waterways. And flood risk management, we continue to deal with climate variability, and we've got over half our population within 50 miles of a coast or a water body. And so it's a lot of exposure. And so our work in that sector has never been more important as the country continues to grow and expand. So does the risk. And so we're managing that. And I think helping the country understand risk, understand flood risk and how to manage it is important we make decisions about what the future should look like. And then our ecosystem restoration mission is really huge, because with the population we've got, you know, ecosystems can be the bill payer for that. And so we're finding ways to harmonize that and add value. And all our other missions devolve from those three. Our hydropower mission, we would not have that but for the fact that we've got a dam somewhere, either a flood control dam or a navigation dam. But we produce 25% of this nation's hydropower, clean, no carbon footprint, in a time where we've got, again, growing populations and growing urban centers. That power matters now more than it ever has. And recreation, we had over 260 million visitors at our recreation sites over the last few years, averages over 260 million people. That's bigger than Disney, a lot less expensive than Disney. And the good news about our recreation mission is, you know, we've got over 200 lakes, you know, with dams around this country. They were built literally in the middle of nowhere, most of them, for flood control purposes downstream. And now each of those, almost every one of those, is a little economic engine for that community. That provides, you know, people come there, they spend their money, they recreate, they relax. That community depends on that. And it's created economic value, economic opportunity in places that was outside the reach of any kind of economic development. So I think that's something to be proud of, both the opportunity to recreate and the opportunity to give those small communities some economic promise. And so I'd even go so far, our regulatory mission is really important. I mean, Congress could have given that to anybody. Nobody, when they passed the Clean Water Act, probably would have bet on the Corps getting that mission because it was solidly EPA. But they turned the Corps and said, hey, we want you to take this mission on because regulating wetlands is important for, you know, environmental values, but it's also important for development. We need to be able to have somebody who can be an honest broker and who can harmonize the law with the needs of this country to develop. And I think that's why they turned to the Corps. I think it was the confidence and respect that they have for this agency that they continue to have. If you look at the resources that they continue to invest in us, it's confidence, it's respect, it's value. And so all of that, I think, is why the Corps is important. And I think it's why I have a very optimistic outlook for this agency.
Mr. Belk, I can hear the passion in everything you said, and I know that others greatly appreciate it. I've heard you mention the Mighty Mist several times already, and I can say for sure that I don't know anyone who's worked on or near the Mississippi River who doesn't have an intriguing story. So I wanted to ask what yours is, and then also, you know, if you could give us just some key highlights from your career, I'd appreciate, you know, to gain those from you.
Okay. Yeah, on the river, I honestly did spend a lot of time on it, working around it, the Mississippi River. Initially, 350 miles or so of it centered around Memphis when I was in the district, but later at MVD, I had the privilege of working from Lake Itasca all the way to the Gulf. And so that's been amazing. And I've seen so many things, experienced so many things. The thing that I remember the most that had an impact was during the record flood of 2011. A couple of things came out of that. One, it showed the value of the investment that had occurred up until 2011 in the Mississippi River and tributary system and flood control and water management systems that had been built along the lower Mississippi. We passed the flood record, and not one acre got wet that was not intended to be wet. And it was a crisis averted. The whole country was probably yawning. We weren't in the Corps. We were not yawning. We were on pins and needles. But the system worked. And so that's the first thing. The second thing, though, is during that same event, we operated the Burns Point New Maverick Floodway, which was a floodway designed to divert a significant part of the Mississippi River during flood stage through an area that would absorb water and pull down stages. And it's called the New Maverick Floodway. And we operated it with explosives. We basically detonated over a mile of that levee and up to divert the river in lower flood stages, and had the privilege of sitting on that levee with the Mississippi River Commission. General Walsh was the president of the commission at the time. It was 10 o'clock at night. It was cold. We had actually flown up there, and we tended to fly up and go back to Vicksburg, but we flew up and stayed, and we all had short sleeve shirts on, and it turned cold and it started raining. And we were there for probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 days. I finally scraped up. Somebody gave me a Corps of Engineers, you know, emergency ops windbreaker, which was not sufficient, but it beat what I had. And so that's what we were doing. Well, at 10 o'clock on the night of May 2nd, I think it was May 2nd, 2011, we were sitting on the levee in a vehicle. All of the charges had been primed, and on the order of General Walsh, they fired it. And you could see the charges work their way down over a mile of levee at night. It was just awe-inspiring. And then it was quiet. You didn't hear a thing. And then you heard the water rushing into the floodway. You couldn't see it. It was dark. And it got bigger. And so I'll never forget that. I knew people who lived in the floodway, and my heart went out to them because, you know, it was all that water was going to take everything with it, and it did. But still remember that. Probably one of the most galvanizing memories I have of working for the Corps and experiencing, you know, the power of that river. And you had a second part to your question, and I've kind of had a flow of consciousness there, and I've forgotten. So you'll have to remind me the second part of the question.
Absolutely. I was just wondering, what are any key highlights from your career?
Yeah, so that one, jumps out. When I was in Memphis, most of my highlights were around people that I worked with and that I learned from, and I remember them, and I remember their impact on me more than things. But in Memphis, I remember the first real job, when I got a permanent job in Memphis, the first thing they had me do was work on a harbor. I had never worked on a harbor before, and when I was in the private sector, that would never have happened. You just wouldn't be, you would start off and get very good at one little thing and over time, but right out of the box, here's a harbor below Helena, Arkansas. We need to build it. We got to build it quick. And getting involved in the harbor design, immersion in that was valuable to me. It was also showed me this organization will let you, they'll invest in you and they'll trust you, and you got to perform. And so that was huge. When I got to my career progression in the district, I took the scenic route. I spent about a third of my career in engineering and then went into project management, became a DPM. My DPM time was special because it's my first time as a sort of a senior leader in an organization. And so it was a huge learning experience for me. And then getting the call and going to Mississippi Valley Division, what I found was, I guess I was pretty smug after being in a district for, at that time, 23 years or some odd years. I was pretty smug, thought I knew. And I got the MVD at the regional level, and I found out I wasn't so smart. I mean, there were some parts of that region that I just didn't know about, and some complexities and some challenges. And so that was humbling. And that taught me the importance of being humble, because there's always something new and it's always something bigger. And so embracing that with the 2011 flood reinforced all of that. When I was at MVD, and what I learned from that. And the other thing I learned was the value of sponsors and partners in my journey. Without them, we simply couldn't accomplish our mission. And it's very easy, particularly us engineers, to sort of stare at our shoes and look at our navel. Can't do that. You got to be embracing partnerships. That's how we get things done. And we have some incredible partners, just like we've got incredible professionals in our workforce. We've got incredible partners that are force multipliers, and so we can never lose sight of that. And then coming to headquarters, again, the national, another humbling experience. It's a very complex water resource landscape around this country, and having that opportunity. One thing I would leave with your listeners is don't be afraid to step out on faith with that job, either that other job in your district or your division office or if you're at headquarters, but also moving to a different office. I would never have probably done that, but that I had people that said, "Hey, you can do this. You need to really think about this." And so we did. We moved from Vicksburg to Memphis to Vicksburg, Vicksburg to headquarters, two tours in Iraq. Spent some time after Katrina in New Orleans. That was another huge experience for me that was shaped a lot of my thinking, and I learned a lot. And so don't be afraid, and going to the secretary's office in the Pentagon, never would have conceived of being there or at headquarters for that matter. But going to work at the secretary's office and getting the policy and the administration time. My point is to your listeners, don't be afraid to step through that door when door opens. Don't be afraid to step out on faith. Any job is a change, and you got to embrace uncertainty and embrace change, but the benefits far outweigh the challenges and the cost. And I just would encourage all the listeners to keep that in mind and seek out those opportunities, and don't be afraid to step out on faith.
Yeah, Mr. Buck, that's great hearing you. Thank you for sharing this story with us. And obviously there's a new door opening for you that you're going to be stepping through. So I'm kind of curious as to what's next for you. Are you going to be helping a borrower with our most exciting new program, the Core Water Infrastructure Financing Program? You're going to be on a kayak, riding around some Core Managed Lake. What are your future plans?
Yeah, so great question. So I'm going back home to Mississippi. Our home's there, my wife's there. And so we're going to kind of do some traveling. We got our oldest daughter and our two grandkids that moved about 5 miles from us. They were in Nashville. They're now close by. So that will be another focus area. I'll continue working. I don't know what I'll do yet, but either you know, work maybe for an AE firm, maybe hang out a shingle, maybe be a greeter at Walmart. I don't know. I'll figure that out. But we'll work. I got a lot of years out. I'm not a rocking chair guy, and there's things that I'd like to do, experience, you know, and I've already said I've got a short attention span, so it's time to try something different. But I am leaving the Corps. It's bittersweet for me, mainly, again, because of the people and the opportunities the Corps has given me over the years. It's a head scratcher for me at how that all has happened. But I would offer maybe 3 points as before we close for your listeners to consider as you continue your journey in the Corps and really your life journey. And the first is just, it's really important to stay humble and to be kind. As you accumulate more responsibilities, as you grow in your career, and as you assume higher level positions, it's very easy to lose track of that and to get sort of focused on, you know, I'm pretty high, pretty important around here. And so, but you really got to resist that, you know, be humble, be kind to others, because, but for others, you won't be very successful at all. The second point would be just put people first and make time for them. Don't become so busy that people become an afterthought. They should be the main thought, and always make time. I know there's only so many hours in the day, but choose how you spend those hours. And when you choose, choose people over things as much as you can. And finally, you know, as you continue to move in your career and accumulate experience, accumulate wisdom, be a positive force inside the organization. Be positive, uplift others, and see opportunities where others may see fear or may see trepidation. See opportunity and be enthusiastic about that. I would share those 3 points for your listeners because to me and my journey, they make sense.
Well, Mr. Belk, I think I speak for Aaron, for myself, and for the whole organization when I say that we're going to miss you, but we certainly wish you well with this next journey. And we're super confident that you'll go on to continue to share the good story of the organization and everything that we do with others that you interact with out in the public. So appreciate that very much.
Well, thank you. I'm proud of the Corps. I'm proud of having been a part of this organization for so long. I bleed Corps red, and I will continue to do that no matter what my next journey might be. So thank you for the opportunity to interact and visit with you.
Hey, Mr. Belk, it's been great having you here one last time on our podcast. And I definitely probably couldn't leave without personally thanking you, you know, for all your support for me over my career. I know we've been working together for at least 20 years or so. It's been a great 20 years and pushing the envelope, but also our sponsors. I know our sponsors always really appreciated you and working with you and all of those, the stakeholders and other entities that have supported the Corps over the years. I've seen you speak a number of times in front of those, and it's always been an inspiration. So, Mr. Belk, I just want to thank you for joining us today for this edition of Inside the Castle. We appreciate you and your insights. Until next time, be safe, be innovative, and be inspirational.
Thanks for joining us for this Inside the Castle podcast. To provide your feedback, email us at cw.infrastructure.team@usace.army.mil. Stay tuned for additional Inside the Castle podcasts as we explore life inside the Corps and revolutionize civil works together.